The Senate will please come to order. Senator Coe, are you ready? Members of the Senate, each year the Wyoming legislature sponsors the Legislative Internship Program, which allows students enrolled at an institution of higher education to obtain credit along with a unique insight into the legislative branch of government and all its vital responsibility in creating public policy. Interim Director LaVonda Copsa, who I've known for many, many years, joins us this morning, we're running behind, joins us this afternoon, along with some of the interns of the 2018 budget session. And Senator Burns introduced me to them, and what a great group of young people. We're so proud of them. LaVonda, would you please say a few words about the program, and then we would like each intern to introduce themselves and share with us where they are from and future plans and anything else you might want to say, as long as it only takes 5 or 10 minutes. So, Senators, let's welcome somebody that does a great job for the state, LaVonda, and these students to the Senate.
Thank you all so much. It is, again, a privilege. I have done this now for 16 years, and I love it. And I still love it. And I'm hoping that each year the interns are able to contribute to you, and I know that they really appreciate learning a lot about the process. So we have had, over the course that I have been keeping records, about 210 interns who have, from high school and college, who have participated in that. And this year, I just wanted to say a couple different projects that they've worked on. One included the Millennium Bulk Longview Terminal, and they compiled a list of Management Council bills from 1970 to the present. They continue to just summarize committee the whole debates and helping out some of the legislators on that, as well as other projects. They help committee secretaries. They observe committee meetings, the floor debates, and then they get to meet with the elected officials. We just got back from the Supreme Court, where they were able to see the Judicial Learning Center and meet with the newly appointed Justice Lynn Bloomgarden. Did I say that right? Okay. Bloomgarden. And so that was really fun for us to be able to do that, and just a real honor. So I would like them to come up here. Oh, before I do, we did have, really uniquely, we had two students from Sri Lanka participating in the internship this year, and neither one of them was able to come to the recognition, but I just thought that was really special and has been sort of a unique flavor that that brought, as well as all the other students. So they are going to come, say their name and their school and where they're from. And
welcome. The floor is yours. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Anna Mazzarelli. I am majoring in management and marketing at the University of Wyoming, and I am a Gillette native.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Grace Blaze Anderson from Devil's Tower. I'm a senior in high school at the Wyoming Virtual Academy, and I hope to major in political science and communications.
I thought I was tall before. I'm Michael Davison. I'm from Cheyenne. I graduated from Cheyenne South High School this year, and I also want to major in political science.
I'm John Scott, and I'm from here. I'm with the Shenton Central High School, and I go to LCCC, and I major in political science.
Fix his coat. There you go.
My name is Marvin Vinlow, and I took a couple years off after graduating from Cheyenne East, and I've just been interning here at the local district attorney's office. So hopefully one day I'm going to be able to be an attorney. So.
I'm Savannah McCauley. I'm from Green River, Wyoming, and I'm double majoring in social science and mathematics at Western Wyoming College.
I'm Matthew Kipper. I'm a political science major at Laramie County Community College, and I'm originally from here in Cheyenne.
I'm Peyton Loy, and I'm attending Eastern Wyoming College, and I'm from Torrington, Wyoming.
Let's congratulate them.
faculty. I was just going to say, you know, I'm so excited about the program, and I figured that, as you know, these interns and among the others are sort of our future business leaders and political leaders and educational leaders of the future. So thanks for supporting the program. And is it okay if we come and get a picture?
Absolutely, we'll do that. You know, I was just thinking, member of the Senate, we could take these young people and we could have Senator Hastert give up his seat to the lady from Green River to vote. We could have Senator Driscoll give up his to the lady from Devil's Tower that was pretty articulate. And, you know, I have to tell you that she recognized me as the chairman of a lot of the things that you don't do all the time, so I really like that. And we got how many from Cheyenne? Four of you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's five of you. You four could probably do the job of these five. We could... Anyway, so once again, yes, Senator Wasserberger, did you want to say something?
Have my seat.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to thank you. And then in the past, I want to also read this. The Management Council has offered a legislative student intern grant program designed to help students defray some of the expenses incurred while participating in the student intern program. Due to the legislators' budget reductions, the grant program is no longer being funded. Boy, I understand that one, darn it. A letter has been distributed to your desk outlining ways that you can assist these students in the future to ensure that the legislative internship program remains strong. I encourage you to consider this letter and donate to the important program. Count me in. I'll have Darlene give you a check. I'm on board. I think it's great. I'll do my fair share, and I'm sure these other senators will as well. Best of luck to all of you. It's great to see you. Thank you. You're our future. You are our future. One more time, let's thank them. Come on up here. Oh, yeah. Who wants to sit in the chair?
I will.
Okay. And let's get around. Come on. Sit there. Grab the gavel. Everybody get around him.
Well, isn't this
right
neat?
Here behind you, or stand right here behind you. I want the lady that recognized me as chairman to stand beside me, Ogden. Whoa. Oh, I thought. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. We'll get you a copy of this picture. Good luck to you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Do we have messages from the House?
From the House of Representatives, March 7, 2018. Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Message number 261. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing Senate File 99, State Fairgrounds Horse Racing Events, Ayes 28, Noes 31, Excused 1. Message number 262. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing Senate File 52, Workers' Compensation Rate Discount, Ayes 18, Noes 40, Excused 2. Message number 263, Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing Senate File 110, Paramutual Events, Horse Racing Account, Ayes 26, Noes 31, Excused 2, Absent 1. From the House of Representatives, March 8, 2018, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the following bills, the House did concur on Senate amendments. Message number 264, concurrence passed, House Bill 41, Hemp Extract Revisions, Ayes 60. Message number 265, House Bill number 103, Wyoming Legal Tender Act, Ayes 55, Noes 5. Message number 266, House Bill 157, Healthcare Providers Sexual Assault Protections 2, Ayes 58, Noes 2. Message number 267, House Bill number 192, Legislator Communications on Recordings and Broadcasts, Ayes 60. Message number 268, House Joint Resolution number 5, Yellowstone and Grand Teton Wildlife Conservation Fees, Ayes 34, Noes 26. Message number 269, House Bill number 14, Municipal Jurisdiction, Ayes 57, Noes 3. Message number 270, House Bill number 36, Move Over Requirement, Ayes 50, Noes 9, Excused 1. Message number 273, House Bill 175, Common College Transcript, Ayes 60. Message number 271, concurrence failed. Mr. President, the House failed to concur on Senate amendments to House Bill number 78, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, Ayes 13, Noes 47. Message number 272, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with the like Committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 78. The House conferees are Representative Greer, Chairman, Representative Hunt, and Representative Lindholm. House requests the Senate appoint a Conference Committee number 1 to meet with like Committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Message number 274, Joint Conference Committee Report, adopted. Mr. President, the House adopted Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on House Joint Resolution number 8, 150th anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger. Ayes 60. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Okay, the Conference Committee for House Bill 78, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, will be Senator Driscoll, Chairman, Senator Hicks, and Senator Meyer. We loaded her up. Senator Case, you ready in our Joint Conference Committee report? Reading clerk, please read that in.
Joint Conference Committee Report 1 on House Joint Resolution 8, 150th anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger. Signed by Representatives Allen, Larson, and Simpson. Senators Case, Anselmi Dalton, and Ellis.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would move the Joint Conference Committee report to House Joint Resolution 8. It's referencing Senate message number 231. Mr. President, you can see that everyone signed the Conference Committee report. What we did was adopt the Standing Committee from the Senate. We took off the second reading amendment, but we further amended that language that I think will be acceptable to the Senate. And if I get to the bill here, I'll tell you what that says. That Section 1 paragraph, if you recall, we had amended it to say that the Wyoming legislature commemorates the 150th anniversary of the signing of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger by educating people, period. President, that was not really acceptable to the House sponsor and the members of the House. And so we added in the language from the next several lines, but we changed the ending. So the ending, which had the words honoring the original intent of the treaty, is no longer there. So Section 1 reads, and I think it's okay, that the Wyoming legislature commemorates the 150th anniversary of the signing of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger by educating Native and non-Native people about the treaty and by illustrating that the Eastern Shoshone and Shoshone-Bannock tribes continue to be significant contributors to the success of this country and its future with forward-looking positive relationships with the United States government and each of the several states, period. So I think that's a good compromise. I hope you support it. Ask for a positive vote.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt the Joint Conference Committee report referencing message number 231 to House Joint Resolution 8, 150th anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger. If you vote aye, you vote to adopt. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? Aye. Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Ellis.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nethercott.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasterberger.
Aye.
President Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. House Bill 140, Joint Conference Committee, 30, aye.
By your vote, you have voted to adopt the Joint Conference Committee report to House Joint Resolution 850th Anniversary of the 1868 Treaty of Fort Bridger. With that order of business, signing of enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act number 35.
Senate Enrolled Act number 35 being original Senate File 89, an act relating to local government funding.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 35 being original Senate File number 89. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 26.
House Enrolled Act number 26 being original House Bill 125, an act relating to the Wyoming Lottery.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 26 being original House Bill 125. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 27.
House Enrolled Act number 27 being original House Bill 70, an act relating to securities.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 27 being original House Bill 70. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 28.
House Enrolled Act number 28 being original House Bill 8, an act relating to stalking crimes, offenses, and protective orders.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 28 being original House Bill 8. So signed. House Enrolled Act number 29.
House Enrolled Act number 29 being original House Bill 28, an act relating to education accountability.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 29 being original House Bill number 28. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 30.
House Enrolled Act number 30 being original House Bill 31, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 30 being original House Bill number 31. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 31.
House Enrolled Act number 31 being original House Bill 61, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substances Act.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 31 being original House Bill number 61. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 32.
House Enrolled Act number 32 being original House Bill 106, an act relating to municipal courts.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 32 being original House Bill 106. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 33.
House Enrolled Act number 33 being original House Bill 108, an act relating to the Office of State Superintendent of Public Instruction.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 33 being original House Bill 108. I have so signed House Enrolled Act number 34.
House Enrolled Act Number 34, being Original House Bill 141, an act relating to weapons.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 34, being Original House Bill 141. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 35.
House Enrolled Act Number 35, being Original House Bill 117, an act relating to domestic abuse and sexual violence.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 35, being Original House Bill 117. I have so signed House Enrolled Act Number 36.
House Enrolled Act Number 36, being Original House Bill 99, an act relating to controlled substances.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 36, being Original House Bill 99. I have so signed, and House Enrolled Act Number 37.
House Enrolled Act Number 37, being Original House Bill 29, an act relating to the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act Number 37, being Original House Bill 29. I have so signed. Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe we're ready to continue third reading. Okay, bill's on third reading. You wish to have privilege of the floor or anything there, Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
No, not at this time.
Okay. House Bill 140, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 140, School Finance Amendments 4, sponsored by Representative Northrup, an act relating to school finance.
Okay, we have a couple of amendments. Would you read the first, third reading amendment number one in, please?
House Bill 140, third reading amendment number one to engrossed copy, page 23, line 16.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 140. This is a cleanup amendment the staff brought me. That's all it is. Ask that you support it.
Okay, further discussion? All in favor of third reading amendment number one to House Bill 140, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number two. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
House Bill 140, third reading amendment number two to a gross copy, page 34, lines 1 through 22.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment, third reading amendment number two to Senate file, or House Bill 140, and I'd like to walk folks through the amendment. I've handed out, along with the amendment, three sheets of paper. And let's turn our attention to the first, which is titled Estimated K-12 Reductions is the first line of it. So you see the first block up there top, and this shows the impact on the model. Now, this is not the actual dollars out the door, but the model. In Campbell 4, the court referred to that as legislative grace. You've got legislative model, and then dollars above and beyond that, or excuse me, you've got the evidence-based model, and then dollars above and beyond that, the legislative model. That difference between what the evidence says is you got to have and what we've given them above and beyond is what the Campbell Court called legislative grace. So on HB 140, that block at the top, you'll see where it says funding model elements, and these are the things that are changed by HB 140. The ADM is counted at the district level, groundskeepers, student assessment, and then it's phased in. Then the second reading amendment that was presented by my colleague from Cody caps special education for 2 years but gives back a $2 million appropriation for special education out of district placements. So you see there under years 19 that has a net impact to the model of negative $7 million, fiscal 2020, a net impact to the model of 2023, the total of $27 million. Going down to the next block, it says Kinski third reading amendment. The only thing here is it removes that two-year phase-in of two-thirds and one-third. So let's look at the impact of that, which is on the very last line, total reductions with removal of phase-in and special education, $18 million, up from $7 million, and then 24.6, up from 20, for a total for the biennium of $42 million. And once again, I've got to emphasize this is variance from the model as opposed to dollars actually available for expending. If you turn to the next one, it has two blocks that says session, legislation, financial impact. And I don't know about you folks, but I get confused every once in a while as to all the different changes that have taken place, and especially when you're newer, I tried to have a primer here. So in 2016, we passed the penny plan with a two-year phase-in. 2017, we passed HB 236, which is hailed commonly as a 3.7% cut, but it's from the model with a two-year phase-in. And then 2018, we had, assuming we enact HB 140 with the co-second amendment, and I made a mistake there. It should not say Kinski third. It should just say the co-second. Then on the right-hand side, you see the net cumulative financial impact. In 2017, phase one of the penny plan kicks in at a 1%. 2018, phase two of the penny plan kicks in, and phase one of HB 236. 2019, phase two of HB 236, and phase one of HB 140 with the co-second. To 2020, phase two of HB 140 with the co-second. The next block is identical, except that it has the Kinski third in, which basically eliminates the phase in. So now that's all variances from the model. Pick up your third chart, and now what we're going to look at is actual dollars. That is, if you go down to the treasurer's office and add up all the checks that got written, and you add up the 31 mil levy from the districts, what are the actual dollars out? So on the first block there, it says appropriations from the general fund, SIPA, LISRA, and reserve accounts. This is state spending, total state spending, net of education, just so you get an order of magnitude of what everything else is relative to education. The second block says K-12 foundation program guarantee and off-model funding. This is total dollars to education, actual dollars. What you'll see there is even after HB 236, even after the penny plan, even after HB 140, the spending goes up in actual dollars every single biennium. So let's go down to 15-16. You see there was an increase of 5.72% or $158 million. 17-18, where some of these changes to the model, amendments to the model first began to take place, a net increase of $68 million or 2.3%, and projected then in 19-20 an increase of $37 million. And then by 21-22, the escalators kick back in. It's a net increase of $108 million. If you take that time series in that right-hand column of prior
biennium. You've got 10 seconds. Keep going.
Okay. May I use my second five, Mr. President?
I'll allow that.
If you average those, you've got 9.3%, which means it would take 7.5 years for total education funding to double, doubling every 7.5 years. So the next block shows the net impact of HB 140 with the co-amendment. And you see even there, under prior biennium change, there's still a net increase of $10 million or 0.34%. And by 21-22, there's still an increase of $86 million. And then finally, the last column, by eliminating the phase-in, you get an actual reduction to dollars out of $5 million and a rebound due to the escalators of $101 million. I think this is something important for you to be able to take back home. I think it's important for us to be able to dwell upon, because we hear all this talk about cuts, 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 but the reality of it is there's actual extra dollars going out in every one of these bienniums. What it does come down to is ultimately a policy choice for things like health insurance. Do we insulate everybody from the increases? In my business, I shared the increases with the employees. That's not what we do in our model. Unlimited special ed, unlimited transportation, we're finally starting to get a handle on those things. But I think it's important for you to see these figures, and I thought that the this third reading amendment was a good vehicle to illustrate that. I'll take questions, if I may, then, with my remaining minutes. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and I'm still trying to understand this handout, which, Mr. President, I find to be very useful. But if I'm understanding the way the blocks are correctly, it looks to me like actual education spending in that second block has increased by figures much higher than our general inflation rate, at the very least almost two times. And going forward, with the possible exception of the 1920 figure in the next to last line, which is only 1.25%, that may not exceed inflation, but everything else does on quite a scale. And still, we're seeing this steady increase in funding, and that if we adopted the one amendment, if we adopt this amendment, we'll wind up with a very slight, nineteen hundredths of a percent decrease, followed by an increase as the escalators in our formula kick in again. Mr. President, I think that really puts in perspective what we're trying to do here, if I'm reading this right, and that's what I'm trying to find out. We have treated education extraordinarily well. And even with the reductions that we're seeing throughout the rest of state government, we're still treating education extraordinarily well. And their actual dollars are going up overall. Now, there'll be some school districts that have lost students where the dollars do gradually go down. And that almost has to be, or we'll bust the bank. Mr. President, suggest to me we're doing a very responsible job funding education, one that may be too rich for us to sustain long term. But for now, it looks to me like we're in good shape with this amendment.
Just a second, Senator Kinski. Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. It's just questions. I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm wondering where they're coming from. I distinctly remember that we spent approximately, and I can't quite remember, but it seems like we're spending about $1.6 billion on education K through 12. And so these numbers are much higher than the numbers that I think that we're spending. If we estimate the line fiscal year 17 and 18, it says we spent $3.6 billion. Or if we go all the way across, we're at K-12 foundation program guarantee and off-model funding, almost $3 billion. Even if we add in everything from major maintenance, which I think was about $80 million, and then what we spent for school CapCon, we don't get to that number. So I'm questioning where these numbers came from. And they look to be exorbitantly high. I will say that with the escalators in the model, yes, the numbers continue to go up. But I don't think that these are the numbers that I think are correct. And I would ask the sponsor to explain how those numbers came about.
Okay. Senator Nethercart, were you jumping up?
Yes, Mr. President, thank you. I have a question for the sponsor. Just for clarity, when reviewing this graph or this chart, is it accurate to state that if we adopt this third reading amendment to House Bill 140, that for biennium 2021-2022, we will have increased education spending by 3.4%?
Okay, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I've been dealing with education funding for quite a while, and when we project out, the key to the numbers is always what the assumptions are. And that's what I really would like to know. What is the growth rate of ADM? We have to know that. We typically end up assuming at least a 1% growth rate. So that accounts for 1% increase in your budget right there, unless we're assuming flat. And I think it's essential for us to know that, because that's a full percentage point potentially of the future growth. Need to know that. The second thing that we absolutely need to know on the assumptions is, what is the assumed increase in the health care costs? Because honestly, that's literally been hundreds of millions of dollars of increases in the budget over the last decade. I'm not talking tens of millions, Mr. President. I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars of the budget increase in the last decade has gone towards health insurance. So when we say we're not cutting here, the question is, what do you mean? We are cutting educational expenditures, but we're not cutting the overall budget, because we peg the amount of money for health insurance to the state health insurance. And those go up between 5 and 10% a year, and it's a substantial portion of the overall budget. So what portion is that? Mr. President, I would also ask, are there any other inflationary adjustments that are included in this? Because again, we typically have an annual ECA that is included in future projections. Some of that's going to be for energy, some of that's going to be for salary, some of that's going to be for non-professional staff salary, and some of it's going to be for equipment. I don't know whether this is including those, because if that is, then that's a fixed. So, Mr. President, before we vote on this, we really should fully understand all of the assumptions in the future projection, because I realistically can make this number whatever we want it to be based on assumptions. If we assume a bunch of people are coming into the state, I can get that up to 3 or 4% probably. If we assume that people are leaving the state, we can actually take that down and decrease the numbers. So if the proponent of this amendment could provide all of that to us on his second opportunity, I realize he doesn't have a further opportunity, that would be appreciated. That's one point, Mr. President. I know I'm running low on time on this, but I wanted to point out also that the concept of the one-third, two-third, the phased-in reductions, that was something we talked about in the Education Committee, and that was something we kept from the other side because of the fact that there are a few districts, particularly some of the smaller districts, that would have such a tremendous impact year over year that there's no way they could reasonably implement that without doing damage potentially to their education. They wouldn't be able to adjust. This amendment that's proposed here eliminates that transition of one-third of the effect, then two-thirds of the effect, and then in the third year, the full effect of the changes through House Bill 140 would be implemented. I don't see an easy way to adjust this amendment to change that. I'd suggest we vote that down, because if we don't, I don't know if everybody's taking a chance at looking at the long-term effects for your own district, your favorite little district on the sheet. But I can assure you, Mr. President, for some of you, it's quite dramatic. And in 1 year, that would be felt significantly. You'd have to be getting rid of teachers to potentially compensate for that change. Thank you, Mr. President.
Just a second, Senator Wasserberger, before you speak for your second time. Go ahead, Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, just try to narrow those assumptions down. I think the previous speaker said we assume that there's a 1% increase annually of students, and I'm wondering,
how that's changing relative to our state population, which had been flat and is actually now decreasing. Do we have more children moving into the state and adults leaving the state, or I'm wondering about that assumption. And he may have the numbers to back that up.
Okay, anyone else for their first time? We go into the second one. Senator Driscoll, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I've got just a few questions. You know, I'm getting literally hundreds of emails about cuts, and I'm reading the chart on the K-12 Foundation, and I'm asking a question, have we actually ever done a cut, or have we just done a cut to an increase? Because the numbers I show go all the way from 34% increases to 5.7. That's on our actual spending. So I'm wanting to know if we've actually done a cut or if we've got a lot of people out there talking big time about us bleeding them to death when in truth they've actually had increases.
Anybody else for the first time? Okay, Senator Wasserberg, for your second time.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Just to correct myself, I was looking at these numbers thinking that to get this number that would be that high, we have to have major maintenance and capital construction added in there. But if you read at the very bottom of that page, there's a double asterisk, which essentially says this does not include major maintenance or capital construction. So this is operating expenses of K-12. So essentially, in fiscal years 17 and 18, we spent $3 billion. That's almost our total budget. And so I don't think these numbers are factual. I think that we spent somewhere around $1.6 billion in K-12 education.
Biennium.
Oh, this is a biennium number.
Okay, just a second. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. President, this has been a fascinating discussion, and I thought, well, you know, I wonder. And so I went down and grabbed my handy-dandy, which I managed to remember to bring to me with session, the handy-dandy 2017 fiscal data budget book that our LSO puts out. And if I go back to the tab on school finance, on school finance funding, and I look, and while the numbers don't come out exactly right, and of course there's more breakdown in the fiscal notebook, I can tell you that, you know, just going back, and of course it doesn't do perspective, but I'll just go back to 2015, 2016, and 2017, 2018. It has it broken down by year. In 2015, the total block grant funding guarantee was $1,378,000,000, roughly. And you added on top of that $51,400,000 of off-model additional funding, gives a total guarantee and off-model funding of $1.429 billion. That was for that year. The next year, that same number was $1.496 billion or $1.497 billion. In 2017, that number was $1.512 million, and then the estimated number for 2018, which wouldn't have had the reductions that we put in the supplemental budget, at almost 21 million. So, in each year, even in the fiscal data budget book, they have gone up. And if you ever want to take time to look at that, the couple pages behind that then show it broken down on what the school branch school, what that means for each individual district in the school in the data budget book. And so you can go down, you can find out what's happened in each one of those years. And in most years, what you've seen over the last several is there has been more money each year. Now, do costs go up each year? Well, of course they do. Have your insurance rates gone up? Sure, mine have gone up. The states have gone up. If the states have gone up, that means the schools have gone up. I think that we can argue, it's one argument to talk about the fact that things cost more. Indeed, they do. But just dollars to dollars on a year-over-year basis, I don't have the actual figures for 2018 because I don't think it's not over yet. but they are showing year-over-year increases.
Okay, Senator Office, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. For my second time, I sought out the information to answer my own questions of exactly what's going on here. So the assumptions are no ECA. So there actually is no escalator in these assumptions for external cost adjustment, which means no inflation is actually included from a standard inflation of the block grant aspect. It assumes flat enrollment, so there's actually no increase here that we're seeing from ADM changes. So the number of students that are going in are going to be the same for each of the next three biennium in this calculation. The changes, the entirety of the changes we see here, are due to the assumption that on an annual basis, there will be a 10% increase each year on health insurance. And then that's compounded over the biennium, and that's adjusted. That's the bulk of what we're seeing. And the rest of the increase that we're seeing here is a 4% annual increase on special education costs, which goes into effect after the cap is withdrawn, because we're assuming that there's a cap. So everything you see here for the projection of the future costs for the next biennium is health care increases, not education increases. So to say that there's more money available over that time is inaccurate. They have to spend it on health care increases. It's not free money lying around. It's the assumption that health care costs will go up. So too will the cost of health care and the expenses. So that's a break even. Any cut we make is then a cut to education. And then the reason we see that increase out there in 21-22 is that is the point at which the cap will be removed for the special education. The 4% is then compounded over that period of time. So, Mr. President, the assumption that we have all of these automatic escalators that we need to end and we actually need to cut just means that, yeah, health insurance is going to go up, and so too is the cost of special education. So we're going to try and cut more than special education will go up and health insurance costs will go up so that we can give a real cut. That's already a real cut. If we hold the budget constant, we're already cutting the amount of money we spend on education because we are entirely unable to control the amount of money that we spend on health care. On and against the amendment.
Yeah, Mr. Vice President, why don't you come up here, please?
President?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. And I was going to stay out of this, but just, and I'm not going to debate the merits of what's been talked about other than how we come up with these numbers. And, you know, members of the Senate, these escalators, just when we come up with these numbers that were derived by our staff, they weren't just pulled out of the air. It's because of operating experiences. And what we've seen over time is a way to be able to determine what this will happen and how it is. So what happened 5 or 6 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, you can develop a history, and you understand that being an engineer, my colleague from over the ivory tower, you can understand this. You develop a baseline. And all I think we're saying as I listen to the debate is this baseline shows these are realistic numbers in terms of escalators, what we might experience. I would bet with you that, you know, 2 or 3 years from now that some of these numbers we're talking about today, steak dinner at Sweeler's in Hudson, that we're going to be closer to what the numbers show than what we're thinking about. Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President.
Further discussion on amendment. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. President, on and for the amendment, I think what the numbers are showing us is that we are spending more. How that's distributed is not in our bailiwick, but we are block funding more for education every year, and that's what we're trying to get under control is what is going to be the increase. And there has not been cuts to education, K through 12 education. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For your second time, you've got 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
15 seconds left. Minutes.
30 seconds of that. Thank you. It was a fascinating discussion. It's one that we needed to have. It was my purpose in bringing the amendment. I couldn't have said it any better than my friend from Devil's Tower. What we've been doing is decreasing the increase, but we're still increasing. With that, Mr. President, I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay, without objection, that amendment has been withdrawn. House Bill 140, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Will the Chief Clerk, or not, will it be read a third time? Will the bill pass the Senate? Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin? Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Flatern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 25 aye, 5 no.
House Bill 140, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 140 has passed the Senate. House Bill 156, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 156, State Songs, sponsored by Representative Zwanitzer, an act relating to the state song.
Okay, we have a couple of third reading amendments. Will the reading clerk please read in the first one?
House Bill 156, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 12.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 156 and ask for your favorable vote. This is just a cleanup. Since we defeated the amendment yesterday, we need to change the comma to an and to clean up the language. And that's all it does.
Further discussion?
Questions.
Okay. Question being called for. We're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 156. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number 2. Reading clerk, please read that in.
House Bill 156, third reading amendment number 2. Delete the...
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 156 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Folks, this is just an opportunity for the Senate. We've had a lot of fun with this bill. But out of respect for the process... And I understand that second reading amendments are part of the process, but this particular bill came through pretty clean to us, and we added to it and added to it. So in that spirit, it's just a step back, Mr. President, to allow this body to take a breath, to realize what we're trying to do here and let the process work. We were talking about one song to add to the other song that we have as a state of Wyoming state song. Most of you have seen the handout that was on your desk about our beloved Cowboy Joe song that we sing at games, and it gives you a little history. I wasn't aware of that history of how that song came, but I knew it wasn't originally a Wyoming cowboy song that we've plagiarized and changed the words a little bit. And it's a rousing song. I love singing it, and I won't sing it right now, Mr. President, but it brings different feelings to me as a cowboy fight song at our great university than does what we heard this morning, that song being sung by kids. And the authors of that song and the composers of that song. And when we talk about Bighorn Mountains and Powder River Basin and all those good things, it invokes feelings that I think a state song should have us invoke. And so this amendment, folks, is just an opportunity for the Senate to take a step back, do the right thing, and ask you to pass this amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Question being called for. We're voting on Third reading amendment number 2 to 156. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
Okay, that amendment has passed. House Bill 156, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Baumplater?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 aye, 5 no.
House Bill 156, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 156 has passed the Senate. House Bill 186, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 186, SIPA Guarantee, sponsored by Representative Harshman, an act relating to public funds.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 4 to
number House, 1.
Number 1? Okay, let's see. Let's get the right one. Number 1 to Senate file House Bill 186 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is an amendment that looks similar to the second reading amendment. However, after some discussion with the co-sponsors here, the new co-sponsors, yourself and Majority Leader Perkins, I think we've come to an agreement that this might be a good amendment to have to go to a conference. And so just kind of a refresher, It changes the amount of money that's tipped in SIPA and LSRA, reduces it to 1/8% or 1/8 over the 3.25% and under the spending policy amount, where the LISRA is 7/8 over the 3/4 policy amount. Draw your attention that the guarantees are only for the 3.25%. General fund, and this is from the reserve account, and it's the 1/8 over 3.25 for the SIPA account. The LISRA isn't guaranteed, but it can go up to the difference between those two and the spending policy account, which, as you can see in the flow chart, if you still have it, this year it's for 19 and 20 it's 5, and in 21 it drops down to 4.75, and 22 4.5. So, Mr. President, I think it does what I said it would do. It's going to marginalize SIPA, and it's going to use it for major maintenance. And with that explanation, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 186. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins? Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss? Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Bonflader?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 186 has passed. House Bill 186 had been read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Cope?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Von Fladen?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye. Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 2 no.
House Bill 186, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 186 has passed the Senate. House Bill 194. Third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 194, State-Funded Capital Construction, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, an act relating to state-funded facilities.
Okay, we have several amendments. Would the reading clerk please read in third reading amendment number 1?
House Bill 194, third reading amendment number 1 to engrossed copy to substitute bill number 1, page 3, after line 13.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 194. Folks, this applies to that portion of the bill that allows for loans to local governments or community colleges out of the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. There's a section that talks about the SLIB board making rules and guidelines for that. This adds to those other rules that they should have the applicant demonstrate that they've looked for about for other funding before they turn to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. We're trying to learn from what happened with the water fund, where people went to that as the lender of first resort before they ever looked at federal funds. And so we're just asking, please look everywhere else before you look to the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 1. I don't believe there's any money in this, so we're not going to take a roll call vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 1 has passed. Third reading amendment number 2. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
House Bill 194, third reading amendment number 2 to engrossed copy to substitute bill number 1, page 6, line 13.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 194 and ask the bodies to vote aye. Mr. President, what this is was an amendment that was brought to me by staff. As we've talked about this, we've got a number of different market rates that are floating around here. There's other amendments that come later that talk about those. But the ones that are in there right now are, as has been discussed and debated earlier today, that they are less than the market rate of return on the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. And so this was brought to me by senior staff of the LSO as an ability. And what the point of this is that our treasurer has obligations to make sure that when he invests, he does so under the prudent investor standard. Similar to when we do public and purpose investments, the legislature has the authority to either waive or just simply deem certain investments to be in accordance with the prudent investor standard. And that's what the substitute bill does. This would go out, and this basically what would say for the loan provisions that we have in this bill, as we talked about this morning, that to the extent that they are not equal to or would not have been invested in under the prudent investor rule, the legislature deems these to be appropriate, and that they otherwise long story short, it will keep the treasurer from violating the prudent investor rule, which is important as we talk about these things. And so with that, I would stand for questions and ask the body's favorable consideration.
Further discussion? There being none, we're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 194. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number 3. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
House Bill 194, third reading amendment number 3 to engrossed copy, corrected copy, to substitute bill number 1, page 49 after line 5.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and I'll just apologize on this one. This is not the last one that you'll see with my name on it today. I did take my own admonition and went to my office and dug into this bill and looked at it. This one doesn't necessarily have to come from that review, but as if you read the paper this morning, either the Casper paper or the Cheyenne paper, you know that there was a break-in at the governor's house and that there was a man that made it all the way into the house where the governor was not harmed, but it was a pretty scary proposition. My recollection is that that's the third time during this governor's term that someone's either attempted to assault to get into the house. There's been, if you remember, there was a woman who ran into the gate, tried to run her car through the gate and into the residence. There was another person that was caught there. That in each of these cases, it may not be that there was harm specifically intended towards the governor or his family. And generally, as we would normally find in these types of tragic circumstances, usually it's someone who has an issue with some kind of mental illness or delusion going on. But nevertheless, I think the point is that what we find is that this individual is able to get in the house all the way. But by the grace of God, that there's not a tragedy to the governor, his family, or to the poor, to the man who broke into the place. And so, in looking at that, what a lot of people may not know is that this, you know, we go over there and you look at that nice fence, and that's an expensive fence, but it just doesn't do the job. There's not enough lighting. There's not enough security over there. And so what this does, what this amendment does is simply provide an opportunity to create and direct the State Building Commission, which is made up of the 5 electeds, to review the security facility requirements for the governor's residence and buildings and grounds related to the residence, and authorize modifications to non-personnel security measures for the residence, building and grounds as it determines appropriate. And then it also directs, under subsection B, you see the various things. And what it is talk about, let's look at this residence, and let's find out if this residence is the right place to be. If it's the right location and it needs to be fixed and modified, let's do that. If we need to build a new residence, let's look at that and do that. Or if we need to find another existing property the state already owns that can be done. I'd suggest to you that if you look at the Eidelman Mansion, particularly in the concert with the next door, which I can't remember the name of that building, but where the Attorney General is now, you combine those two, that has the opportunity to be redone and to be very nice. Something that if we put some money into it would be secure. So this doesn't require any of that done. It doesn't authorize anything to be done other than to make some immediate security installation and modification to the existing grounds. But to take a look at this, a serious look, it's time that we do this. If you understood all the facts that were behind the thing, it was a scary deal. And frankly, our chief executive and his or her family should be able to be safe and secure in the residence we provide. I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. On for this amendment, this has been a long time in discussion, and as I served on appropriations years ago, we were discussing this. And it's a difficult situation because no sitting governor wants this to be on their resume. We come from a conservative state. We represent a conservative state. And no governor in their right mind is going to say, yeah, I'm for building us a new house. So the legislature, Mr. President, is going to have to take this upon ourselves, and we're going to have to take the heat for it. But it's time. You know, I remember discussing it, and I remember the stories of when dignitaries come to visit our great state and the governor puts them up in the house. It's just the room down the hall. And, we hear stories of Camp David and different cottages and a different. If I was visiting, I would like my own place. I don't want a room down the hall. It's not a sleepover. So those things need to be looked at. The security, yes, but just the age of the home and the way it's set up, we can do better. And so I'm on and for the amendment.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, could I divide the amendment?
I don't know.
Mr.
Tell me
President,
what you got in mind.
Division one would be line 3 through line 40, and then starting again on page 2, line 9 through line 33. That would be division one. Division two would be starting on page 1, line 42, going through page 2, line 1 through 7.
I think you mean 1 through 8.
Yeah, 1 through 8.
Go ahead, Senator Office.
Point of order. Division 2 doesn't appear to stand on its own.
Go ahead, Senator Case.
To the point of order, Senator, Mr. President, I think it would if you allowed lines 1 through 8 to cover both amendments and then allowed the renumbering of C to A. But it's a separate concept. It is encumbered by the positioning language, but it is a separate concept.
Yeah, and I was just reading through it, and that would be my take on it as well, so I'm going to allow those divisions to occur.
Mr. President, just briefly on that point of order.
Sure, you may. Go ahead, Senator Office.
Thank you, Mr. President. My understanding is that C presupposes that the State Building Commission does an investigation. I don't understand why C is standing by itself unless we're just offering them the possibility that they might happen to come upon a determination, but it's the investigation is basically lines 10 through 40. An outcome of that investigation is line 42. I can understand how the investigation can exist with the outcome, but the outcome and determination is hard to come by without the investigation. That, Mr. President, was why I thought it wouldn't stand alone. I do appreciate the comments of the good senator from Lander, though, that it certainly is a lot better if we allow lines 1 through 8 and 27 through 33 to carry with either choice.
Well, thank you for that, Senator Office. I'm going to still allow it. And what we're going to do is we're going to take 1 through 7, I believe, would be the portion of the amendment that applies to both divisions 1 and 2. And then they will apply to either, and they'll stand alone, and that's what we'll do. So we're beginning on Division 1, which is lines 1 through 40 on page 1, and lines 9 through, actually goes through 34 on page 2. That's Division 1. Everybody understand that?
Yep.
Okay, speaking to Division 1, Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, on and for Division 1, I think it's a great concept. I think it's something we need to do.
Okay, further discussion. We're voting on Division 1 to third reading amendment number 3 to 194, that being lines 1 through 40 on page 1 and lines 9 through 34 on page 2. All in favor, say let's do a roll call vote on that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's got the $400,000 in there, so we're going to do a roll call vote.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner? Aye. Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott? No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Division 1, 29 aye, 1 no.
Third reading, amendment number 3, division 1, which is lines 1 through 40 on page 1, and lines 9 through 34 on page 2, has passed. We're on division number 2. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I just think it presupposes already that we're going to be building a new capital and residence. You know, when we say it may authorize negotiations to sell the current governor's residence and grounds without the legislature having an opportunity to understand what the total cost implications is, what the study says, is to have the Facilities Commission enter into negotiations. I think it runs a situation that they could enter into negotiations and spend a lot of time and effort, real estate transactions, reviewing contracts, and all that stuff, and come back, and without the legislative body being able to even review the findings, maybe there's two or three different locations that we would want to look at to evaluate the feasibility of additional security, different locations. I think this is just too premature. We'll be back here in about 10 and a half months. We can all look at the report at that point in time. And if it looks good to go and we have some concrete concepts and ideas as where we would put the governor's mansion, what it's going to cost, is it a retrofit? I mean, if you read the first section, the first thing they got to do is determine if there's an opportunity to do substantial security increases at the current facilities. Let's look at that. Let's get the report. Then let's look at the alternatives of what it's going to cost to build it. So just to enter in a negotiation to sell it, the current place, I think, is premature.
Hey, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. If what he said was true, I would be against this too. But I think if you look at what it says and what it's intended here, is it says if they determine that the most viable location has been identified, and you go on there, and if you go to lines 1 through 3 on page 2, and just we'll start there. So ultimately, it says it may authorize negotiations to sell the governor's residence and grounds. If you keep reading, the commission may enter into agreement to sell the residence and grounds or to provide a right of first refusal to potential buyer, but the agreement shall be contingent upon legislative appropriation of sufficient funds to construct a new governor's residence enacted during the 2019 general session. So if there is an agreement, they can negotiate and they can have an offer to sell, but if we don't appropriate to take care of this in a year from now, then that's a condition precedent, which means that contract would be void if we don't approve the money. So we tried to cover that because, I agree with that. We need to look at that. We need to find a reasonable, an appropriate, but most practical and cost beneficial way of doing this and making our executive safe.
So Senator Hicks, do you want to speak for a second time?
Yeah, Mr. President, and I agree with it, the legislature still has the authority to come back in the 2019 session. I think when you enter into a sales agreement, there's a marketing, there's a component there, you do the appraisal cost, the contracts, the agreements for sale, all this stuff. I think it presupposes that we're going to do this. I think we probably will do this. I just think that we could potentially spend a whole lot of time with the State Building Commission and their attorneys putting together these contracts and agreement when we'll be back here in 10 months, and then we can pull the trigger after we see the study. I just worry about spending a lot of time and an effort putting together a real estate contract that we have to approve in 10 or 12 months anyway without seeing the report. I'm just trying to look at the fiscal responsibility of how not to saddle the building commission
to enter into a contractual real estate agreement that we may or may not approve anyway. And especially in the 10.5 month, 11 month time frame, we're going to have to do that anyway. Let's take a look at the report if that's the direction we want to go.
Senator Scott, I believe that's is.
Mr. President.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeas and nays, please.
Okay, I was going to ask for him anyway, but thank you for reminding me. We're voting on third reading amendment number 3, division number 2, which is lines 1 through 7, starting on line 42 on page 1, through lines 1 through 8 on page 2. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard? No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Shard, no to aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Division 2, 28 aye, 2 no.
Third reading amendment number 3, division 2 has passed. Third reading amendment number 4. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
House Bill 194, third reading amendment number 4, to engrossed copy to substitute bill number 1, page 4, line 11.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 194. Ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, I want to definitely say that this was a team effort. I thank the good senator from the Sheridan area for reminding us about some different parts in the bill that needed addressed, and the good senator from Carbon County for suggesting some terminology that was superior to our previous efforts, and also the majority floor leader for originally suggesting the loan origination fees. So it's a team effort, Mr. President. And what we do is that we do go into those areas that were over on page 4 first. We struck Treasury bond and put Treasury security that's more inclusive. Page 5, that was the 1.5% that good senator from the Sheridan area suggested we look at. And we made a conforming amendment for Treasury securities there. And on page 5, 18, that was the added in the origination fee and also put in the loss reserve account participation. And over on page 10, line 8, that was another 0.1% scenario, and we replaced that with a similar language to conform it to Treasury securities of a similar term. So I think we got this one in pretty good shape now, Mr. President. Ask for the body's favorable participation.
Further discussion, Senator Landon.
Participation. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just, I have followed this through the last two readings, and I guess my question would be: are these going to be affordable? And what on a good old average loan? Maybe the bringer of the amendment can help me know what the difference might be. If we take $30 million and we loan it out for 20 years. We're going to have to explain this in a conference committee somewhere anyway. What if we go from 1.5, what is this interest rate going to be? And my concern is I just hope, Mr. President, we're not pricing ourselves out of the market again. We've got funds available at a high interest rate. I just want to make sure that this is at least accessible for cities, towns, counties, and the folks that we're pointing this legislation toward. So maybe the bringer could help us understand ballpark. What's the rate going to be now?
Further discussions. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Same concern on and against this amendment. If we keep working at this long enough, we'll have another loan program that's never used. So that's the point. So walk cautiously here. Understand the intent. It's well-intended, but these cities, towns, and counties in this particular case need to know what that percentage is going in, and maybe with a little study and they could come to that conclusion. But these are projects that are 5 and 10 years out. Specifically, this one addresses the streets and the loan program. So walk cautiously on this one. We have programs out there already. I think there's 4 or 5 different loan programs that are not being utilized because of things like this. So it defeats the intent of taking this money and reinvesting it into our own towns and counties and communities and our own infrastructure here in Wyoming. You know, another day or two and we'll bake this one pretty good. So on and against the amendment.
Okay, Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, to answer the good senator for Cali's name, so as of right now, the 2-year treasury is at 2.25%, a 5-year would be 2.65%, and a 10-year would be 2.88% interest. As long as the government's still involved in quantitative easing and out into the future, you're probably looking at some pretty cheap interest rates. The 30-year, I think the other day, had dropped back below 3% for a 30-year treasury note, Mr. President. So at least in the foreseeable future, you're probably talking somewhere in the 2 to 3% rate, depending on the length of the term that they borrow the money for.
Okay, anyone else for their first time? Senator Meyer, you wish to speak for your second time?
Just looking at it here, to the your regular notes on things that are 1 year, they're only 0.98%. Well, that's what it was a year ago, 2.06 here. 90 days, 1.66. 2 years, 2.25. Mr. President, it's the cheapest rate that you can borrow money in the country is U.S. Treasuries. And we're giving it to these folks at the cheapest rate you can borrow money. So that's what we're doing. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 4. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Yep.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Aye. Coe? Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Bonplater?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 21 aye, 9 no.
Third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 194 has passed.
Mm-hmm.
Third reading amendment number 5. Reading clerk, please read that one in.
House Bill 194, third reading amendment number 5 to engross copy to a substitute bill number 1, page 26, line 11.
Before I recognize our majority forwarder, I was wondering why he wanted a longer lunch break, and now I think I'm beginning to understand. So go ahead, Senator Perkins.
This is the last one. I deserve that remark. So with that, I move third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 194 and ask the body's favorable consideration. If you remember, what this does is it goes into a footnote that has to do with the Casper College funding. And what it does is it just what it does, if you remember, we talked about, we flipped those the other day. There's a there's an understanding that I believe we've put together with our Casper College about how they deal with these two projects. I believe that this footnote language will help to make sure that the deal that we've done and that we've passed here and the deal that we've got in force at the college will remain in effect, and they can't, and it makes it harder for them to go around that deal, and so that the money will be as expended as we've got in the bill. And so it only has to do with the matching funds or the private source money. It doesn't have anything to do with, it doesn't change any of the expenditures amounts. It doesn't change anything from gross in the general fund. And it puts some sideboards on the privately sourced funds to make sure that the deal that, and the understanding we have in force will be in place when this happens. And ask your body to vote aye.
Further discussion? Okay, we're voting on third reading amendment number 5. It does have a dollar amount in it, so we'll do a roll call vote. Chief Kirk, please call the roll.
Agar?
Aye.
Aye. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Baldwin?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Boner?
Aye.
Bouchard?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon? Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
No.
No. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas? Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 27 aye, 3 no.
Third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 194 has passed. Further discussion? Ready for the question? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I rise to explain why I intend to vote no against this bill. I'm not asking the rest of you necessarily to follow me, but I think this is a fundamental decision, Mr. President, and I want to explain why I think this bill, passing this bill, is a mistake, and we'll be compelled to vote no. Mr. President, when we first got here this morning, we heard the explanation of the budget bill, and we've gone through these bills on second reading and now third reading, and Mr. President, so many moving parts that I cannot guarantee to you that I fully understand where we are. But I was thinking about it over the noon hour, and it doesn't look to me like we have significantly altered the financial position that we heard on the opening day of General File on the budget bill, where the statement was we're facing a $902 million operating deficit. And, Mr. President, that's consistent with, although it's larger than the figures I did earlier based on an earlier Craig report, I presume that the figure we got on the opening day of General File is more accurate because it had the specifics of what the budget was going to be as it came to us from the Joint Appropriations Committee. And, Mr. Chairman, what I've foreseen looking in the future is that next biennium, we don't do something, will be, if anything, a little worse than this one. And you add that up, we're then going to be, over the next two biennium, we'll have deficit spent to the tune of $1.8 billion. Our reserves, near as I can calculate, when we started here, adding both the LISRA and all the other little reserve pots that people keep finding to finance things, add to $2.1 billion. You look at what we're going to be faced 4 years from now, and going in as we budget for the third biennium, we're going to be faced with another $900 million deficit if we don't change the course, and $300 million in reserves. That's a deficit of $600 million. Mr. President, and I hesitate making the projections out in the future, because there's some things that could go right. Hopefully they will. We could have the stock market continue to boom and not have a crash. It's extraordinarily high levels now, but if nothing goes wrong, maybe it'll continue to go up. Maybe we'll continue to get more capital gains from our permanent investments. We could have the price of natural gas go up. It's hovered in the low $2 range at Opal and the Wyoming pool for most of this year, and that's what's wrong with our coal market, too, or the major thing that's wrong. That could change, I suppose. The price of oil, which is probably the third of the most important considerations there, has crept up a bit. That's been helpful. Maybe it'll do it a good deal more. Maybe somebody will put a stop to the frackers who, with the incentives of free private enterprise, Mr. President, are doing marvels. Maybe. And maybe those things won't happen. And we'll face that kind of a deficit. We have a $600 million deficit. You're going to see a massacre of every program in the state funds.
You have 10 seconds.
You are going to see a tax increase that is just incredible. If we make some changes now, then maybe we can ease that. But I don't see us doing that, and I see this one of the last opportunities. Mr. President, that's why I'm going to vote no. I'm not asking the rest of you to do that. And maybe I've misunderstood some of the moving parts in all this. But we're in trouble, Mr. President, and we're not getting it fixed.
Yeah, Mr. Vice President, would you come up for, please?
President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice President. Members of the Senate, as I listen to my tall colleague from Natrona County, I have to agree with everything that he said. And members of the Senate, this Senate has stood together and hung together on, starting last session, about now's not the time to raise taxes on the citizens of Wyoming when we're experiencing these difficult economic times. People are struggling. Businesses are struggling. We made the right decision then. I will tell you that I'm going to support this, and let me share a little bit with you why. If you look at the projects in here, and you can go through them, we all know what they are. We talk about an economic development issue in the southwestern part of our state, where by spending some money in this particular bill, we will create a bunch of jobs, opportunities, and future revenues. You talk about the initiatives at our university. We talk about our other things that are going on. The money has been in place, even though it's not a high priority for mine. For me, I personally think that the money's there. That makes it easier to do. But the bottom line, members of the Senate, is that structural deficit is not going away. And we work hard. We try to eliminate and cut and make responsible reductions. We never seem to quite get there. And my colleague from Natrona County is right. You know, we made some progress this session. The last bill we passed, 186, I think goes that way to be able to utilize a better return on our PMTF. But at the end of the day, members of the Senate, this being the body I think that is very, very fiscally conservative, is not whittled away enough at this structural deficit. And I think that's a given. I think all of us would agree with that. However, to stop this particular bill, I don't think is the way to do it. We've tried. We'll do the best we can. We'll leave here making it better than we showed up, which is what we're trying to do. But let's support this. The last thing I would say, Mr. Vice President, is that right now with the situation we find our state in terms of jobs and creation, there's opportunities here for a lot of Wyoming people to go to work. And we need to do that. We can't just shut it down. So with that, I would agree with my colleague that that day of reckoning is approaching, members of the Senate. It's real. It's there. It's not anything to kid yourself on, and we cannot continue to rely on savings. I would ask you to support the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak on House Bill 194? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I wish we had a little more time to work on this particular bill. I think there's some areas here, and I agree with the President that there are areas that we need to go forward on, and it's for economic development, and we can put Wyoming people to work. And there's perhaps areas where we don't spend general fund dollars or LISRA dollars, like the community colleges, and those things should move forward. But I think there's a possibility that, and we've done this before, we've had split enactment dates. There might be some of this that if we took the time just a little bit, stood at ease, had the leadership and appropriations committee look at it and ask the question, well, is there any of this stuff that we can say will come into place in 2019 so people know that we want to go forward with it, but we don't really have the fiscal capability of going forward with it today, and that we should come back and take a breath on some of these things. There's some stuff that definitely needs to move forward, absolutely, 100%. Things that's not going to cost the state any money, and we can move forward on those. Structures that we put in place for loans that's not going to cost the state any money after we made our amendments. But there are probably some projects out there that are in the bill that we could take a pause and wait a year. But for that, Mr. President, we'd have to, you know, stop the process for a little bit, let you guys get to work, and come up with some amendments where we could kind of split the baby as to what we've done before, recognizing both Senator Scott's priorities and your priorities. And I just bring that up as a possibility. I think there's probably some areas that we could come to an agreement on and give us some relief on the crisis that we seem to be moving toward. Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, further discussion before Senator Scott speaks for a second time. Anybody else? Okay, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I understand the caution that's out there. But in the pages of this bill, there are some little miracles, like one project that generates 300 jobs, jobs that run about $85,000 a year salaries, and generate $305 million in revenue for this state. I ask that you support the bill.
Anybody else? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Briefly, my majority floor leader laughs when I say briefly because he doesn't think I'm very brief. But let's think about, you know, play the what-if game. If the economy doesn't turn around and doesn't have the upswing that we hope it does, we all know the challenge that we face, and it's education funding shortfall. That's the majority of our problem. They'll continue to get the money. Do we put the rest of the state on hold and fund education fully for the next 3 years, doing no projects? The other argument, this is a rush to the trough. I mean, but my argument is this. We can't put these other projects on hold indefinitely and continue to fund education fully with these increases that we've talked about. That's the concern. So we do a couple of projects around the state, fund education, the economy goes south. Now everybody's on equal footing, including education. And the cuts will come equally to everybody, including education, if that time comes. It's a win-win. I'm not one to refuse to put other projects around the state on hold so we can continue to fund education fully. I won't stand for that. It's got to be equal footing. We share the pain, we share the gain. So on and for the bill.
Anybody else? Senator Scott for your second time.
Mr. President, let me address a couple of the comments. Mr. President, there's, I think, probably without exception, but certainly through the major projects in this bill, they're good projects. I don't think I would have any hesitation, Mr. President, about voting for this bill if we didn't have the magnitude of the structural deficit we have. I don't think we're going to significantly improve on them. We've had three readings. We've got to come down and make a decision, make a vote. The thing I would say, Mr. President, is I picked this bill as the one to speak out on because I think capital construction is a classic item. So when you don't have the money, that's what you put off. I don't see anything here that we absolutely have to have in the next year till we're down here again and have better knowledge of where we're going and what some of our other options are. Again, I'm not asking the rest of you to join me. I'm just saying this session has not succeeded in dealing with the structural deficit, and this bill may be our last chance.
Okay. House Bill 194, having read three separate times, the question is, shall the House bill pass the Senate? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Anselmi Dalton?
Aye.
Aye. Baldwin?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? No. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger? Aye. Aye. President Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. House Bill 194, 23 ayes, 7 no.
House Bill 194, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, House Bill 194 has passed the Senate. Do we have any messages from the House? Does anybody want to privilege the floor? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, any more enrolled acts? Anything else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears my desk.
Well, look at that. Thank you, Mr. In that case, Mr. President, I don't have anything else. As you know, that we've got a couple bills on third reading tomorrow. I think one? No, we've got two. I think two bills, four bills. I'm given the sign of four bills. Thank you for holding up four fingers there, madam. So obviously tomorrow will be an interesting day. First of all, I just want to express appreciation. It's dry. Again, I thanked you yesterday. I thank you again. Thank staff again. Both the staff that's in the chamber and the staff that's not in the chamber and out there elsewhere. Thank you for your courtesy, your friendship, your discussion, and your hard work. Anyway, I just appreciate you. Thank you, Mr. President. And with that, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Okay. Are there any announcements? Senator Landon.
Mr. President, I apologize for the tardiness of my
rise there. The conference committee on the retirement fund, and I'm looking for a number. I don't have that in front of me, but we're going to meet at 5:30 this evening, H37, to conference on the retirement account bill. Just wanted to let you all know. Thank you.
Senator Landon, I believe that is House Bill 109.
Thank you, Mr. President. 109.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your joint travel, the travel committee number 6 will meet with our peers down the hall tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock, Jonah, H38 for interim topics.
Okay. One other thing, Mr. Majority Floor Leader or Vice President, is there a tour of the Capitol that's going on maybe tomorrow? Mr. Vice President, am I right on that?
Yes, Mr. President, and I totally forgot about it. There is a tour tomorrow at 8 a.m. Plan to wear long pants and clothes, toed shoes with hard soles and no heels. Leather is preferred. Parking in the construction trailer lot is very limited. That's 26th and whatever the southbound road is there. Parking in the construction trailer lot is limited, so you may need to park in adjacent streets and meet at the construction trailer at 8 a.m. tomorrow. And if you can't make it tomorrow, please let Rihanna know in LSO, and they will put a personal tour on for you if you come back to Cheyenne at some time in the near future. So with that, sorry, Mr. President, I totally spaced that tour out tomorrow, but please be there if you can do it.
How many of the members of the Senate have not seen the Capitol in the last 3 or 4 months? You have not been there to see it? Oh, I'd really encourage you to do it. It's really amazing what's going on, not only with what we've uncovered relative to the original building, but the dynamics of the construction and all of the different issues that were really the Capitol and the deterioration of it and all that. I would encourage you to go. Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Vice President.
And I will tell you, it's a professionally done tour. Wendy and her assistant, Mike, are really wonderful in the tour, and you'll have one of the engineers with you, and it's a great thing to go through.
Okay. Senator Burns?
Mr. President, your committee number 2, appropriations, will meet informally upon adjournment down at the JSC room to go over rough draft of the agreement with the House on the budget bill, and then we'll be meeting at 8:30 to sign the conference report.
Okay. You heard the motion. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, March the 9th.